Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Our topic for today?
Military families, trauma, and relationships. An interview with Elizabeth Polinsky.
And we just finished that interview, and she was really fascinating.
She was very interesting. Learned a lot about military families that, you know, you don't think of that. Well, and certainly not coming from one I didn't think about.
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned in the podcast, both of our fathers were World War II era veterans.
Right.
And so we weren't moved, you know, they weren't full-time when
right.
we were kids and stuff. We weren't moved
We weren't born.
We weren't born, yes, then. I mean, my father was still in the military all the way through my childhood, but he was in the reserve. So he would go away for a couple of weeks now and then, but we were not, we weren't moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because Elizabeth Polinsky is herself a military kid. I mean, she grew up in a military family,
and married to a Navy man.
So she's she knows whereof she speaks.
Yes, she does.
A lot of interesting
stuff. She's been helping a lot of military couples deal with all of the particular problems that go along with being in the military.
Absolutely. So. Do check that out. But before we get to that interview, we've got all our exciting stuff to talk about, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Let's talk about the books that
okay.
launched this podcast.
Yes, well, the one that started it all is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Yeah, read that book, folks. It's, it's a darn good book.
It's got a lot of great information.
Yep.
And that was followed up by It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
And, you know, read those two books, and by golly, you'll either improve your relationship or you realize what you need to do to improve your relationship. and you'll also, I mentioned this last time, too, especially the second one, It's Not About Communication.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also maybe have some insight as to how come our country is so polarized and ways that we can reduce that polarization, because that's one of my passions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we want to invite you to sign up for my newsletter.
Right.
Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. And how do you do that, Judy? How do people sign up?
Well, I believe they go to your website.
Well, they can even go to our website.
Or our CTN7. That's right.
The one, if you're watching us, the one over my head up there, at least it will be when I've edited the podcast, CTN7.com, that's our podcast website. And when you go there, a box appears, and the box will let you sign up for my newsletter. And when you do, you will get a link that entitles you to the book that Judy is holding up, the name of which is
7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, that is free when you sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah, the book you were holding isn't free. That one you'd have to buy, but the contents thereof,
you can get a free PDF, the electronic version. In other words,
I'm not that crazy that I'm going to send you, you know, I'm going to spend money and send you a paper book.
Right.
It's a nice paper book, by the way. If you want to buy it, go to Amazon. And and similarly, you can get the Kindle version and you can get the audiobook version of any of these books. And then much more recently, I came up with a little booklet.
My husband complains about my cleaning. What do I do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
It's not about the cleaning. It's about relationship. It's really a way of applying all these ideas that we talk about in that specific context. So before we move on to our interview, let's put in a word for our sponsor. And who is our sponsor?
And our sponsor is The Blue Tent. Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber. Am I holding that up?
There? You are holding it up in a way that I hope those of you who watch it can see that beautiful book. It's got a very nice cover. Those of you who are only hearing this, if you go to lariazilber.com, LariaZylber, lariazilber.com, you will find information about the book. You'll get to see that beautiful cover.
Or Amazon, too.
And you can go to Amazon and just search for Laria Zilber. We'll get you there, too.
Right.
And you'll see her book. And it is a wonderful book. If you like erotica, you will love this book. It is well-written erotica. And moreover, it's not only well-written erotica, it is based in the biblical text. And those of you who know us from this podcast know that we are Jewish and very heavily involved in our Jewish community. And we do Torah study. And the person who wrote this book knows her stuff. And it's, I think she refers to it as sexual midrash.
Yes.
So those of you who know what midrash is, check it out.
And if those of you who don't, Google it. M-I-D-R-A-S-H. And it has nothing to do with a middle body rash.
Yeah, nothing to do with rash. It's a Hebrew word, folks. It comes from searching out. That's what the word comes from. So do check out that.
Mm-hmm. So now,
without further ado,
on to our interview.
Our guest today is Elizabeth Polinsky. Elizabeth Polinsky is a certified emotionally focused couples therapist practicing in Virginia Beach, Virginia. In her counseling practice, she provides weekly counseling and weekend-long marriage intensives to couples looking to overcome personality and communication differences so they can leave tense disagreements feeling closer and more connected. Growing up in a military family, and now as a military spouse, Liz has a special passion for helping military couples navigate the unique challenges of military life. Because of this, she also offers educational reconnection workshops for military couples and provides many free resources through the Communicate and Connect podcast for military relationships. Liz, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here. Yeah.
Well, we're delighted to have you. So what we always like to ask our guests for starters, and you kind of intimated this a little bit in the intro that you sent us. How did you get into the work you do?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, gosh, that's a long story, but I'm going to try to give you the condensed version. So both my parents were military. They were a dual military couple. Mm-hmm. And sort of some of the challenges of military life did play a role in their divorce. Mm-hmm. And they were in the Navy. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I have like generations of military on both sides of my family. Mm-hmm. I would say most have been Navy, but there have been some like outliers who went a different path. Yeah. So I had a passion for working with military and veterans for even back then before I was a military spouse. And I worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs, predominantly as a trauma-based therapist, for a few years before I met my husband. And one of the things that stood out to me when I was at the VA, you know, I was helping people with trauma, which sometimes it was combat trauma, sometimes it was sexual trauma, and those are really horrific things that people went through. And sometimes I would have a couple of clients who would say, like, yeah, I had this really horrible thing happen, but what's harder for me is the fact that my marriage ended, that mm-hmm. I couldn't have saved that. Mm-hmm. And that always just, I don't know, it like hit my gut in some sort of way that really stuck with me. And when I met my husband, who is in the Navy as well, and we started moving around, you know, like right before we got married, it was like, am I going to really commit? I have to leave my job. What am I going to do? common freak out moment for a lot of military spouses. And that was when I decided, you know, I'm going to do couples therapy. I've always wanted to do couples therapy, and I want to help prevent what happened to my parents, prevent what I'm hearing about from these clients in the trauma therapy about what happened to their relationships. So that is kind of how my story began, and the passion that like what generated that passion for working with military and veteran couples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were saying when you were working for the Department of Veterans Affairs, I think you said, so mm-hmm. a lot of trauma work. I know the VA does a lot of, how is that related to the VA?
That is the VA.
Yeah. I was thinking Veterans Administration used to be, but I guess it's Department of Veterans Affairs. Yeah. Uh-huh. I have a fair amount of training in trauma work as well before I got into mostly couples therapy.
Yeah. And
I've talked with numbers of folks who worked for the VA, and you know, huge amount of what we know about, I'm sure you realize this, about working with trauma has been developed by a lot of the work that the VA has done.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Trying stuff because it's difficult work. I'm curious, how'd you get into EFT, emotionally focused therapy. Did you study with Sue Johnson, or what was your?
Not with Sue. Maybe one day. That would be so cool. She's, you know, for people listening who are familiar with EFT, she's like the guru, you know, like the original one to really kick off EFT couples therapy. So no, but I have trained with the person next down, second level. So that's I'll count that as my cool little patch.
for our listeners, can you explain EFT?
So emotionally focused couple therapy. So there were sort of two questions in there. So EFT is currently by APA, so the American Psychological Association, they keep track of all of the research for all of the types of different therapy and their effectiveness for different things. EFT is currently the only one that's considered an evidence-based treatment, according to APA, for relationship distress. Mm-hmm. So knowing that information, that was one of the reasons that I wanted to do EFT. I think just my clinical training has really stressed like evidence-based treatments. And so that was really important to me. But the model also, because it's based on attachment theory, just fits so well with my understanding of relationships in the world. And so emotionally focused couple therapy, EFT for short, is based on this idea that we form emotional attachments to significant people in our life. Mm-hmm. Typically growing up, that's our parents or whoever's raising us. Mm-hmm. And then as we grow older, that becomes our romantic partner and our spouse. And ideally, the quality of that relationship is one where I feel emotionally safe. I feel accepted for who I am. I know that I can come to you in a time of need and you're going to be there for me. And I have a lot of security and feelings of security in that relationship. For whatever reason, there are so many reasons, but we all don't always have that in our relationships. It can feel very insecure and it can feel unsafe. And especially for people who have gone through a lot of trauma, relationships can feel very unsafe. So with EFT, we help couples build that sense of emotional security in their relationship again.
And then it sounds like that, I mean, it appealed to you because of the evidence base, which is because they've done a lot of research. And, mm-hmm. and it's interesting, you know, different therapies are more or less amenable to research. And that's how they accumulate the research that lets them be evidence-based, which I respect. I don't know if you wouldn't know this. I'm not even sure how many of our listeners would know this, but back in my background, I used to be a statistician.
That's so cool.
I got my PhD on the research side and then got clinical training later.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, I came out of it thinking, well, of course, you know, the fact that people think something's going to work doesn't mean it's really going to work, you know, but you know. So anyway, that EFT is, yeah, certainly one of the ones that has a lot of research behind it. And it sounds like it appealed to you on a personal level also.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I would say like attachment styles, which opens a whole new can of worms for our conversation here. So like if my early relationships don't have that feeling of safety for whatever reason, and sometimes it doesn't mean that parents are bad parents. It could just be life circumstances, like there was like if I'm being raised by a single mom and my mom has to work two jobs and she's not around a whole lot, then I might have a feeling that she's not really there for me, even though she's working really hard to show up for our family. So there can be really good reasons. But if as a child I feel like I'm not really accepted, or if I try to go to you, you're not going to be available to me, then I might develop a sense of insecurity on the inside. Mm-hmm. And then in future relationships, I might feel kind of insecure as well. And people cope with that insecurity in different ways, which is called an attachment style. It's just the way that they cope with those feelings of insecurity. anxious and avoidant. If anyone wants to go look it up, I won't go too in deep in depth there.
There's a lot available on that.
Yes, yeah, so much. So we don't need to do a whole attachment 101 class yeah. here. But I had a lot of feelings of insecurity. Mm-hmm. And I had a really rough time in my early romantic relationships that I think also spurred part of my passion to work with couples as well. So I think there was, I'm having a memory right now of when I was in my master's program and I had like a really rough breakup and I was trying to figure out like, why did this relationship fail? And I had found this book called The Science of Happily Ever After by Tai Toshiro. And it's not necessarily attachment based. It's sort of a lot of different research on what makes for happy relationships, kind of condensed into regular people language. So, but I remember I got 3 copies of that book right after that breakup happened. I got the Kindle version, the audiobook version, and I drove like 2 hours to get it out of Barnes and Noble. I was I'm going to figure this out.
That's music to our ears.
Okay. Yes. I was really motivated to get that book. Having to navigate through my own feelings of insecurity and form a relationship with my husband, which is the most secure relationship I've ever had in my life. That was so much work. It's so much work to do, but those, it connected with me at a personal level, EFT, of helping people work through feelings of insecurity, either that stem from previous relationships or from the current relationship, and help them build that feeling of emotional safety where they can be accepted for who they are and feel relaxed and kind of more confident that this relationship is safe for me and my person's not leaving. They're going to be there.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask if you could talk to us about some of the problems that are specific to military couples.
And I would add, I got to imagine, you know, both of our fathers were in World War II era, but neither one of us had a situation where they were like, you know, full-time active duty moving all over the place. So we didn't go through that part. But I'm wondering, if the specific military things and how that relates to attachment issues.
Yes. Yeah. So many, sometimes it's like where to start. I think the most, commonly thought about one is deployments, which is where the military service member will go away for it depends a little bit by branch and what their job is, but I would say probably around 9 months is probably average across all the military branches for a deployment, where they are potentially in a combat zone or in a sort of war ready environment to respond. And that can involve a lot of fear for the family members who are at home.
Sure.
It might involve depending on the type of job, they may have more or less communication with the service member while the service member is deployed. And so they may, I'm thinking about this last time that my husband was deployed, and there are these like blackout moments which just means that I'm not going to hear from him for weeks. I have no idea when I'm going to hear from him again. And so that can be hard on multiple levels. One is the fear for the safety of the service member. There is also a feeling for many people that I'm sort of alone and I'm having to deal with all of these things on my own. And it's kind of a joke in at least the military spouse circles that I'm a part of, is sort of like what can go wrong will go wrong while your partner is deployed. So, yes. Yeah. Like having to, I'm trying to think of things that have happened. Like, we never had a rodent problem in our house. And then my husband is deployed and people are telling me that I have rats. It wasn't rats, it was birds. And how do you get birds out of your house? Like stuff like that, that only happens when he's gone.
That's when the furnace goes and the roof leaks. And
exactly, yeah. So
everything goes, can't get the cable to work.
Yeah, so that can be very challenging. Mm-hmm. In terms of attachment theory, when I'm separated from somebody significant to me, I'm going to experience separation distress, which is this normal anxiety and sadness about being separated from the person that I love. So a lot of military spouses experience a lot more anxiety and depression symptoms during the deployment period and leading up to it, mm-hmm. Sort of like leading up to the separation. So we also have that going on as well during that time period.
Mm-hmm. And what about for families that have to, not just deployed, but there are families that move, right?
All the time, yes. So most military orders tend to be for about 3 years, maybe 2 to 4, depending on, again, the job and the branch. But yeah, you move pretty frequently. And then the longer you're in, the more frequently you tend to move.
Oh, wow.
So it sort of starts out like maybe 3 or 4 years, and then the next set of orders is maybe 3 years, and the next one is like 2.5 years, and it kind of gets shorter and shorter as you go up. But yes, you move so much. So I'll see like a common concern for military couples, and specifically military spouses, is that I'm away from home. So I don't have access to my family or the friends that I grew up with or the support systems that I would normally have if we were just living in one place this whole time. Extra stress around that happens a lot for couples, like when they're about to have a baby and they also don't have that family support,
right?
A lot more tension. It also makes it hard for military spouses to kind of make and keep friends because of the transitional nature. Every few years, we're going to move again. It's already harder to make friends as an adult, but then to not have as much time to really form a friendship, and then to know that they're going to end pretty quickly, can make it hard for military spouses to feel like they have social support.
Yeah. And I can imagine also for a military spouse, how that could affect their career as well. Yes.
Absolutely.
That come with that.
Absolutely. I can't remember the statistics at this moment, but it's a very high percentage that are unemployed or underemployed, meaning that they are like being paid less or working fewer hours than what their qualifications would indicate typically in the job market.
Because it's hard to develop a career path if you're constantly being disrupted by you're not moving because, oh, you've got a better opportunity. You're moving because you got to go with your spouse, and that disrupts whatever you're in the middle of.
Yeah, I can imagine that would present a lot of resentment too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it absolutely does. And I, on my podcast, I recently had a researcher come talk about military spouse employment. And she, one of the interesting things that she said, her name's Dr. Elena DeLumba. In one of her studies, she found that actually the more education you had, the more likely you were to be unemployed or underemployed. Yeah.
Certainly, underemployment. Now, this is my old statistician brain kicking in.
Yeah.
Of course, underemployment is more available to you if you're overqualified.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a little bit of an artifact there, but unemployed is Well, actually, unemployed would work in similar ways in some cases. That's, yeah.
I wonder if employers, are they hesitant to employ military spouses knowing that they're going to be asked to pick up and leave in a couple of years?
That is a good question. That I don't know. I know that there are a lot of resources that the military provides around military spouse employment. It's through Military OneSource, which has a lot of services for military families. They have like free non-medical counseling. They do so much. But one of the things that they do is they help with like job searches, and they have agreements with a lot of different companies who are looking to hire military spouses.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's another thing that's come up in my practice I've noticed over the years, and I'll be interested to hear what you have to say, because it may have shifted over decades. I don't know. I've been in private practice for 28, 29 years now.
Yeah.
And earlier on, I remember this maybe more than now. It has to do with military culture, because there was a sense in which I would sometimes, here would come a spouse, let's say a heterosexual spouse, you know, in my office, and one of them is in the military, let's say it's the man, more likely, not always, of course, but let's say it's the man, and his experience of being in the military, whether or not he's an officer, actually, is that, well, you say, you know, you told what to do, or you tell what to do, and that's that, and it doesn't work so well with his wife.
Yes.
And that seems to
absolutely.
Be
absolutely, you know,
it's military folks and it's police. I've worked with a lot of couples where one of them's a police officer as well, and I'm curious if you can comment on that. Do you see that happen
all the time? Yes. Yeah. And I think another part of that military culture is to compartmentalize my emotions.
Yes, absolutely. You definitely see that with police as well. Yeah.
Yeah, probably firefighters, anybody in this sort of profession, first responder, military sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely. In some ways, when I'm working with military and veteran couples, I feel like I'm helping them to compartmentalize actually military life, kind of undo some of the training that works so lovely in the military and works so poorly with their family relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a common couple conflict, but the times that I see couples show more concern about it is when it starts also being a way that service members are interacting with their kids. Mm-hmm. If they're then it really escalates the couple conflict around the sort of giving orders and just expecting them to be followed.
Yeah, mom doesn't like it when dad's a drill sergeant.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the kids don't cooperate either.
Yes.
Because they didn't sign up.
They're not soldiers, are they?
Yeah, they did not sign up for it. You know, they didn't, take the oath. So it is interesting that way. There's something else that occurs to me, and I'm curious to your take on this. I worked years ago with a guy. I wasn't working with his wife did come in occasionally just to help out with the work. He had had a horrendous trauma history as a child, also had gone through a bunch of things in the military. He was risen up quite high in the military. But in any case, by the time I met him, he had been retired from the military for several years and was working at a place, just a company that did customer service. And one of the things I found fascinating about him was, you know, he had been in war zones, he had been deployed in these secret things that he couldn't tell me about, but they were horrible, you know, whatever, all that sort of stuff. And he'd see people getting all upset over, I don't want to say anything that specifically, like, we live in a small state, so I don't say anything specifically by identifying, but I'll make up something. It's as if he said, for crying out loud, you're getting upset about apple juice, we're delivering apple juice to the grocery store and you're getting all upset about that. You know, it's like, it's apple juice, relax. You know, I mean, he had a perspective on things that I didn't see much in non-military folks. Do you find that it can lend that, you know, when you've been in the middle of incredibly difficult things?
Yes, it changes the range. I suppose we all have an individual range of what's a big deal and what's not a big deal.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It drastically changes the range of what is considered a big deal and not a big deal,
yeah.
Which can be, I think there are pros and cons to that. I think as mm-hmm. part of that, though, with military and veterans, my own struggles of mental health or even chronic pain or health things tend to be lumped in that category of this is not a big deal now because yeah. it's on the low end of that range compared to all of this trauma and combat and everything that I went through when I was deployed.
Yeah, it certainly makes the readjustment period difficult because what I've heard from some veterans is that they have a hard time seeing significance in the work they're doing as civilians.
Yes, that yeah. as well. Yeah, there's a lot of personal meaning. You know, so I'm sure there are some people in the military who are like, oh, it's just a job. You know, I get a paycheck and we're done. But so many people are drawn to the military because of this value of service and like service to the country. And that can be very fulfilling on a personal level, that if they don't have another thing that they're doing afterwards that also has a sense of service or meaning or value, then it can be very demoralizing. Absolutely. It's a big transition period.
The difference in partners, I imagine, you know, between in a couple, that difference in what registers as meaningful can mm-hmm. cause problems. You know,
absolutely.
I think along lines you were saying, like, hey, I don't want to hear about your minor ailments, even though to you they're major, you know. And similarly around, you know, everything you're doing is meaningless. And, you know, that can be hard.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm having like little situations come to my mind right now as you're talking like, oh, Timmy got picked on in school today. Well, he needs to toughen up and just deal with it and tell them to stop, or, you know, yeah. and then it can spiral because then the spouse might feel like, oh, maybe I can't really tell you things. Mm-hmm. You can't empathize. Mm-hmm. And so now the spouse starts sharing less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And then emotional distance grows between them to where eventually, like if that pattern just sort of continued unchecked, we're sharing very little with each other. And now it feels like we're roommates and not actually in a relationship together.
Right. No intimacy.
Yeah. No intimacy. I have just recently, you'll recognize this. Just recently, I have a favorite way of describing that very pattern. And it's, I suppose it's particularly a dirt road thing. Vermont has a lot of dirt roads. I call it the washboard effect, because the way washboards develop on dirt roads, one little thing starts to happen and then the pattern amplifies. And that's a great example, you know. So, you know, dad says something, then mom finds kind of unempathic or something. And then she starts withholding and he starts feeling a little more distant. And then it just amplifies all those situations. And it gets worse and worse over time until, yeah, then what you're dealing with is a couple where there's very little intimacy and they're wondering what happened to our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you help them reconnect, you know, in those situations?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me see how to pull my thoughts together.
Yeah, you have to answer in 15 words or less. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's for me personally, it's like so much information in my brain that it takes me a moment to like, how do I pull this together in a succinct way that is clear and makes sense to people? So
I will tell you, by the way, people ask me something like, gee, how do you do that? If I'm saying, you know, rekindling intimacy or something, and I will often say something, geez, beats the heck out of me. You ought to talk to somebody.
And I'm saying, oh, that would be great. Yeah. Gosh, I think in this example, I suppose there are sort of different patterns that couples can sort of get stuck in. But in this example, where now we're just not sharing, there's not a lot of intimacy, emotional or physical, we're feeling more like roommates. Mm-hmm. Part of what I'm helping couples with this pattern do is to share more about what they're thinking and feeling, to sort of try to unlock the in my mind I have this image of like silos. They're roommates. They may not actually be sleeping in separate rooms, but it feels like they're in totally separate rooms in the house. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to open the doors and get them into the living room again, to share their thoughts and feelings with each other. And then to look at, where do their conversations get really sticky? Where are those moments that I try to share with something with you and I feel like you can't empathize with me? And can I help them work through that conversation in a way that actually leads them to feeling closer, like they can both be heard and that they can both be understood, and that that it isn't that situation where you can't empathize and now I don't want to share anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting as you describe that. I have one of my favorite shticks is about it's like a drinking game. We're saying every time I say tolerate the anxiety, you should take a drink, and then you get very drunk, you know, because I say it a lot. But not that I play drinking games, but that idea of tolerating anxiety is really tricky. And what you're providing, what we as therapists are providing, more than anything else, I think, more than any of our favorite techniques, of which they're a zillion, what we're providing is a relatively calm nervous system. We're the ones in the room who can facilitate just being interested in both of them and clarifying that neither one of them is crazy to be who they are, you know, which is an expression of faith, basically, from my perspective. And that will let them talk about stuff they couldn't do by themselves very easily. And so you're there facilitating, you know, just to invite someone to share their thoughts and feelings is often terrifying.
Yeah.
Especially for men, I will say, as a man in the conversation. Am I going to stereotype here? Yes. We suck at that. You know, we men tend to suck at that. And so it's often really scary to be invited to do that. Particularly when there's also this sense, which I'm guessing is especially acute in military men. Although I think it's men in general, but heterosexual men in general, military in particular, of wanting to protect our wives. And that can have the nasty effect that, well, I won't tell you something important to me because it might upset you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, and it's funny, I had a conversation with a couple last week where the breakthrough for them was that the guy was that kind of guy, didn't happen to be military, but that kind of guy, you know, the breakthrough was that he could tell his wife, you're annoying me right now, as opposed to trying to fix her problem and just frustrating the hell out of her when she just wanted to tell him what was wrong. And he could actually say, you know, you're telling me this stuff, it's really annoying. And he did that. And she was almost delighted that he said it. It's like, okay, I can hear that. You know, it's like adult to adult. Oh, good. Yeah, I'm annoying. I can hear that. You know, hey, you tell me, you're nice enough to tell me I annoy you, because I do, you know. And Judy's great at that, by the way, I have to say.
Yeah, great.
She does it in such a way I don't even feel like I'm being, you know, I just feel like she's lovingly telling me something important, you know. So.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad. I do think that's part of the sign of security, right? Is
Yeah, because I know how he's going to react, and it's not going to be to, you know, bite my head off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you give it as a gift, and I receive it as a gift. And that's the key when you're feeling secure. It's exactly that. Mm-hmm. Those same words in a couple that are very insecure with each other is going to lead to some kind of escalation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like my brain is full right now. I have like all these different offshoots that we could go down. I guess I was just thinking about your example with that guy, because when it is very common for military couples, for the military service member to feel like, I want to protect you from my struggles of military life, And then there's just so much that is like classified, top secret, you know, that they can't share too. But when somebody is protecting in that way, it leaves both people really alone, and it creates more of that silo roommate thing, because now I have to deal with all of my feelings by myself, and I'm alone with all of my feelings, and the partner who I'm protecting feels sort of left out and not included. And so when partners can share like what you are saying you guys can do, which is great, it leads much more to a we're equal and we're teams, and there's a closeness that we have even when I can say I'm annoyed at you and know that that's okay to say, no one's overly triggered by it. It's like the most effective teamwork.
Yeah, so much of the work seems sometimes like taking something, you know, making it possible to be mildly annoyed at your partner, as opposed to feeling like, oh my God, I'm about to be abandoned,
yes, you know,
as opposed to getting into panic mode. And that's, it really does take a sense of secure attachment to, you know, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
How much does PTSD play into the couples that you work with?
Huge. Yeah. Those are my favorite couples. So I think that's probably because I was did so much trauma therapy before, but I so love working with couples where one or both have PTSD and they're trying to navigate that together. There are very effective treatments for PTSD. It's in my opinion, and also pretty supported by the research, that it is one of the most curable mental health diagnoses.
In the past 25, 30 years, the research has been amazing. I'm trained in EMDR and that a lot. And then I know the VA has done a bunch of other techniques as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And those can be, like I would always promote someone going to do trauma processing therapy with one of those treatments, whether it's EMDR, the other common ones are cognitive processing therapy for PTSD, prolonged exposure. There are some others.
Prolonged exposure needs a better name. That one needs a better name. That one is just, the name is terrifying.
It doesn't sound good, does it? Doesn't make you want to.
It works. Yeah. It works really well. It's got good research, but God, the name. They need a better name.
Yes.
Just initials or something. That would be better. You know.
I have heard a lot of people call it PE.
Yeah, I can see why.
I feel like it's going for phys ed.
Phys ed, right.
Yeah. But even after successful completion of trauma therapy and like PTSD symptoms have recited to where there is no longer like that diagnosis would no longer be appropriate, there are still ways that trauma, I still have maybe some insecurities or some scars. They're not so much a wound anymore, but maybe some scars from what I've gone through that I think is so wonderful when the couple can face that together. When my scars from my past come up and my relationship is the safest holding place for me as I'm experiencing that, or even if the trauma symptoms aren't totally resolved and I'm having a flashback or something, to know that I could sort of face that with my partner, it's sort of this idea of a battle buddy. If I bring in the military component, like if I'm going into a danger zone, that's going to be really scary. But it's so much more scary if I have to go alone. It's much more doable if I have a battle buddy. And then at least I'm not alone. And that's where I really see couples work being a big important factor for like just the recovery from trauma. So.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for doing this. How can people get in touch with you and find out about the things? Because you mentioned you offer like weekend workshops and things like that.
I do. Yes. Yeah. So My counseling practice is just Elizabeth Polinsky Counseling. I'm licensed in several states if anybody wants to learn more about counseling. I do therapy intensives that way where, so even if people are from another state, they can come in for a weekend and we can do like intensive therapy work. Mm-hmm. But for couple, like military couples specifically, I have a podcast, the Communicate and Connect podcast. There are a lot of free resources there, and mm-hmm. I'm doing more and more educational workshops that are not therapy through that platform. And so any podcast platform you could find the Communicate and Connect podcast, but it's communicateandconnectpodcast.com. And that has the information about the upcoming Rekindle Connection workshops.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the notes for this episode.
Well, thank you.
So great. Much. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
We're delighted.
Yeah.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Liz Polinsky. And if you have or are involved in a military family and, need some help, I think Liz does telehealth, mostly telehealth these days. So
yeah, I think it depends on which state you're in, whether she does, she can do that. But really good resources and her podcast, mm-hmm. which we will put in the notes.
Very interesting. I've been listening to her podcasts and she's got some good guests and she's got some really good information on her website.
So do check that out. Mm-hmm. So before we go, let's just remind you of a few things. First of all, something we didn't mention in our intro, which is we have
merch.
We have the merch from our podcast. If you too want one of these beautiful mugs that we are holding, and of course, if you're not seeing this, you're missing these beautiful mugs. Right. I will tell you, by the way, if you're not seeing this, you can go to YouTube and see it. And if you're
the 11 ounce size, the 15 ounce size with our beautiful logo on one side, and our Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith motto on the other side.
Absolutely. And you need those mugs. You need the tote bag that has the same message. You need the t-shirts. You need all of it. So, and they make great gifts, too.
They do make great gifts.
So there you go. So go to our ctn7.com, and you'll see how to acquire that wonderful merchandise.
You know, sometimes you need a visual thing, right? So to see this every morning, Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith, what a nice way to start the day is just to see it. My coffee. Oh yeah, I'm going to remember to be kind, don't panic, have faith.
And you know, when you're seeing that, if you've read my books, you have this greatly expanded understanding of what those seven words mean.
Absolutely. And so don't forget to read those books.
Absolutely. And speaking of the books, here they come.
Right. We have Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. That was the original book that started this podcast. And the latest one, It's Not About Communication: Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
And both of those books do talk some about the seven words, because it's a really handy way. People have told me, and I believe them, it's a really handy way of crystallizing a lot of what you need to know to understand relationships.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And there's a couple other booklets I've done. You'll find information about that. If you go to our website, ctn7.com, there's a books tab there, and it'll send it to my website. That'll give you all that information.
And while you're at the website, if you have a question that you would like me and Bruce to talk about on the air, you can write to us from ctn7.com. Or if you would like to suggest a guest, or if you yourself would like to be a guest on our podcast, ctn7.com. It's got it all, all the things that you want to do, either to write to us, be a guest, suggest a guest, suggest a topic.
And give us, on the podcast platforms, like us and rate us and, give us 5 stars and
follow us and tell your friends and share us on social media.
Let people know. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.